This helps us to understand, in the ancient esoteric texts, some of the lost secrets of prayer and healing. One of the great tenets of the esoteric traditions reminds us that although there may be many bodies walking this earth, in consciousness, only one of us is here. And that one of us is the power that chooses which future overlies our everyday activities. The second tenet says to us that we are already healed. I know many of us have heard this before. What I have discovered is that for those who have or are challenged with physical or emotional challenges, or have been diagnosed with potentially life-threatening conditions, knowing that there is a possibility where that condition does not exist is a source of relief for them. And it's from that relief that they find the moments of refuge where they can feel the feeling of what it's like to be already healed, and from that feeling, bring that possibility to bear upon their lives. In Western traditions, we call this a miracle. Miracles have been very well documented. We have video footage from Eastern traditions of ultrasounds inside the bodies of living humans with inoperable, life-threatening conditions. And in the presence of this quality of feeling in their bodies, that condition disappears. The tumors simply disappear in as little as 2 minutes and 40 seconds in real time. This is not a time lapse over days or weeks. In the presence of those who are feeling the feeling that this person is already healed, their body responds to this. If we call feeling a prayer, then these people are using a mode of prayer that was lost to the West 1700 years ago. So whether we are calling forth the healing within our bodies or the peace in our world, it's the same principle that's being used. In the perspective of what we're doing here, this is the principle that we call the Isaiah effect. And this is what Isaiah said to us. Once again, in the only words that he knew as he wrote to a people in his future that he could only imagine, he said, "In each moment of our lives, all things are possible. They are already created, they already exist," and then he showed us how to select from those possibilities by creating the feeling within our bodies of what we choose to experience in our world, feeling as if it had already happened. So, from the perspective of praying for a loved one, for example, this modality of prayer invites us, rather than saying, "Dear God, please heal this person," which is a path and it's valid and it has its place, that's a prayer of supplication. It invites us to use a feeling-based prayer where we feel what it feels like to be in the presence of our loved one or our friend, fully enabled, fully capacitated, already healed and vital, maybe feeling what it feels to hold them in our arms and to touch them with our hearts. And that is the feeling, Isaiah says, that brings that possibility to bear in our lives. And I believe Mother Teresa was a master at having these feelings, of being able to find the feeling of compassion in the presence of events that looked other than compassion. Mother Teresa could find beauty in places where others did not. I had the opportunity of speaking with a woman who was very close to Mother Teresa and lived with her for 17 years. This woman shared with me insights into Mother Teresa's thought processes. She could walk down the streets of Calcutta amidst the dung in the gutters and the filth and the decay. And it is in that dung she would see a flower growing. And in that flower she would find beauty in a place where other people only saw the filth and the decay. And it was from that beauty that became her anchor point, where she would give thanks for that beauty and in that way open the door to the possibility of more healing and more beauty. The Dalai Lama says something very similar. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, when he is speaking about the compassion of his people in the presence of the great challenges that faced them in the 20th century. And I have, once again, a little story I'd like to share regarding the Tibetans in this mode of prayer. Because when we were in Tibet during those 22 days, And the monks and the nuns and the abbots shared with us their insight into this feeling-based prayer. I asked one of the abbots through the translator a question that many people since have asked me. I asked them, I said, if this modality of prayer has such power and it works so well, what has happened to you and your country at this time in our history? Why is Tibet in the condition that they're in today? And that question illustrated my limited thinking in the presence of a very wise, sacred, and holy man who, without judgment, answered me in a way that I'd never expected. And what he said simply was this. He said, the prayer is powerful and the prayer works. He said, when we pray as Tibetans, we don't pray for ourselves. We don't pray for the good of Tibet. We don't say, dear God, please save Tibet, or intervene in this process. We pray for the good of all humans, not even limited to the earth. Of all humans, all beings, all life everywhere, formed and unformed life. And he said, from that perspective, our prayers have worked well. Because what happened was that we held the traditions of compassion in isolation in these mountaintop monasteries for hundreds of years. The rest of the world never saw them. And now that we've been forced from our home, we've been scattered across the earth, and very few people have not heard of the power of compassion. And it is our being scattered across the earth with this message of compassion that we believe will bring us back into our homeland and bring our families back into our homeland, perhaps within this lifetime once again. And as that occurs, not if, they said, as it occurs, our prayers have worked. They've been answered. So I'm sharing this as an insight into perhaps a question that many people may have as they listen to this program, into if the prayer works and the Tibetans use it, why has this happened to them?